This is Audible.
Audible Studios presents The Kaiju Preservation Society. Written by John Scalzi. Performed by Will Wheaton.
Chapter 1. Jamie Gray! Rob Sanders popped his head out of his office door and waved at me, grinning. Come on down, let's do this thing. I got up from my workstation and grabbed the tablet with my notes, grinning as well. I glanced over to Kenesha Williams, who gave me a quick fist bump. Knock him dead, she said. Stone dead, I said, and walked into the CEO's office. It was time for my performance review, and I'm not gonna lie, I was going to crush it. Rob Sanders welcomed me in and motioned me over to his conversation pit, as he liked to call it, which was four massive, primary-colored beanbags around a low table. The table was one of those ones that had a magnetic bead that dragged around blinding white sand under the glass, making geometric patterns as it did so. Currently, the bead was making a swirly pattern. I picked the red beanbag and sank into it, only a little awkwardly. My tablet briefly flopped out of my hand, and I caught it before it skittered off the beanbag and onto the floor. I looked up at Sanders, who was still standing, and smiled. He smiled back, rolled over a standard desk chair, and sat in backward, arms crossed over the back, looking down at me. Oh, I see. CEO power move. Very nice, I thought. I wasn't worried about it. I understood how CEO egos worked, and I was prepared to navigate my way through this one. I was here for my 6-month performance evaluation from Rob, and I was going to, as previously stated, knock him dead. Comfortable? Rob asked me. Supremely, I said. As discreetly as possible, I adjusted my center of gravity so I was no longer listing ever so slightly starboard. Good. How long have you been here at Food Mood, Jamie? 6 months. And how do you feel about your time here? I'm glad you asked, Rob. I feel really good about it. And in fact, I held up my tablet, I'd like to spend some time in this session talking about how I think we can improve not just the Food Mood app, but our relationships with restaurants, delivery people, and users. It's 2020 now, and the food delivery app space has matured. We really need to go all out to distinguish ourselves if we want to genuinely compete with Grubhub and Uber Eats and all the others here in NYC and beyond. So you think we can improve? Yeah, I do. I attempted to lean forward in the beanbag and succeeded only in driving my ass farther into its recesses. I rolled with it and just pointed to my tablet. So, you've heard about this COVID-19 thing. I have, Rob allowed. I think it's pretty clear we're heading for a lockdown. Here in the city, that means people will be getting food deliveries even more than usual. But it also means that restaurants are going to be pinched because they won't be able to do table service. If Food Mood offered to lower our fees in exchange for exclusive listings and delivery service, we'd both make friends with restaurant owners and get a leg up on the other apps. You want us to lower fees? Yes. Decrease revenues during a possible pandemic? No. See, that's the thing. If we move quickly and lock down, pardon the pun, the popular restaurants, we'll see revenues go up because order traffic will go up. And not just our revenue, our delivery people, deliverators. I shifted in the beanbag. What? Deliverators. That's what we're calling them now. Clever, right? I thought up the term. I thought Neal Stephenson did. Who? He's a writer. He wrote Snow Crash. And that's, what, a Frozen sequel? It's a book, actually. Rob waved his hand dismissively. If it's not Disney, we won't get sued for it. You were saying? Our, deliverators could also see an uptick. We could pay a higher delivery fee to them. Not too much. I saw Rob starting to frown here, just enough to differentiate ourselves from the other apps. In a gig economy, just a little boost goes a long way. We could actually build some loyalty, which would improve service, which would be another differentiator. You want to compete on quality, basically. Yes! I made a pointing gesture, which sank me further into the beanbag. I mean, we're already better than the other apps. We just have to drive the point home. It'll cost us a little more, but it will be worth it, is where you're going with this. I think so. I know, wild, right? But that's the whole point. We'll be where everyone else in the food delivery app space isn't. And by the time they figure out what we're up to, we'll own New York City, for starters. You have bold ideas, Jamie, Rob said. You're not afraid to take risks and move the conversation. I beamed and set down my tablet. Thank you, Rob. I think you're right. I took a risk when I left my doctorate program to come work at Food Mood, you know? My friends at the University of Chicago thought I was nuts to pack up and move out to New York and work for a startup. But it just felt right. I think I'm really making a difference in how people order food. I'm glad to hear you say that, because the reason we're here is to talk about your future with Food Mood. Where best to place you so you can utilize that passion you so clearly feel. Well, I'm glad to hear you say that, Rob. I tried to move forward again in the beanbag, failed, and decided to risk a small push-up. It realigned the beanbag, so I was in a slightly less compacted position, but my tablet slid into the well my body had created. I was now sitting on my tablet. I decided to ignore it. Tell me how I can serve the company. Deliberationing. I blinked. What? Deliberationing, Rob repeated. It's what our deliberators do. They deliberate. So, deliberationing. Is that manifestly different from delivery? No, but we can't trademark delivery. I changed the subject. So you want me to head up Food Mood's deliberationing strategies? Rob shook his head. I think that's too limiting for you, don't you think? I don't understand. What I'm saying, Jamie, is that Food Mood needs someone like you on the ground, in the trenches, giving us intel from the street. He waved out the window. Real, gritty, unvarnished, as only you can. I took a minute to let this sink in. You want me to be a Food Mood delivery person. Deliberator. That's not actually a position in the company. That doesn't mean it's not important to the company, Jamie. I tried to adjust again. Failed again. Wait, what's going on here, Rob? What do you mean? I thought this was my 6-month performance review. Rob nodded. In a way it is. But you're telling me you want me to be a deliverator. Whatever the fuck you want to call it, it's not actually a position with the company. You're laying me off. I'm not laying you off, Rob assured me. Then what are you doing? I'm presenting you with an exciting opportunity to enrich the Food Mood work experience in an entirely different way. A way that doesn't pay me benefits or give me health insurance or a salary. Rob tutted at this. You know that's not true. Food Mood has a reciprocal agreement with Duane Reade that gets our deliverators up to 10% off selected health products. Yeah, all right. We're done, I said. I hefted myself up out of the beanbag, slipped and fell back on my tablet, cracking the screen in the process. Perfect. Don't worry about that, Rob said, pointing to the tablet as I finally hauled myself out of my seat. It's company property. You can just leave it when you go. I flung the tablet over to Rob, who grabbed it. You're a real asshole, I said, just so you know. I'm going to miss you as part of the Food Mood family, Jamie, Rob said. But remember, there's always a slot open for you in deliberating. That's a promise. I don't think so. Your choice. He pointed out the door. Kanisha has your severance paperwork ready to go. If you're still here in 15 minutes, building security will help you find the door. He got up out of his chair, walked to his desk, dropped the tablet into the trash can there, and pulled out his phone to make a call. You knew, I said accusingly to Kanisha as I walked up to her. You knew, and you wished me luck anyway. Sorry, she said. Put up your fist. She did, confused. I punched it lightly. There, I said. I'm taking back that previous solidarity fist bump. Fair, she handed me my severance paperwork. I was also told to tell you that a deliverator account has been opened in your name. She said deliverator like it hurt her to say it. You know, just in case. I think I'd rather die. Don't be hasty, Jamie, Kanisha warned. That shutdown is coming, and our Duane Reade discount is now up to 15%. So that was my day, I said to my roommate Brent. We were in the pathetically small fourth floor walk-up on Henry Street that I shared with Brent, Brent's boyfriend Laertes, and a convenient stranger named Reba, who we almost never saw, and if she didn't leave long strands of hair on the shower wall on the daily, might not believe actually existed. "That's rough," Brent said. "Firebomb the place," Laertes said from the room he and Brent shared where he was playing a video game. "No one's firebombing anything," Brent yelled back to Laertes. "Yet," Laertes replied. "You can't firebomb your way out of every problem," Brent said. "You can't," Laertes called back. "Don't firebomb the place," Brent said to me, his voice lowered so Laertes wouldn't hear. "I'm not going to," I promised. "But it's tempting." "So, you're looking for something else now?" "I am, but it's not looking great," I said. "All of New York is in a state of emergency. Everything's closing up. No one's hiring for anything, and what jobs there are won't pay for this." I motioned to our crappy fourth floor walk-up. "I mean, the good news, if you want to call it that, is that my severance payment from Food Mood will pay my share of the rent here for a few months. I might starve, but I won't be homeless, at least until August." Brent looked uncomfortable at that. "What?" I said. He reached over to the pile of mail on the kitchen table we were sitting at and picked up a plain envelope. "I assume you didn't see this then." I took it and opened it. Inside were 10 $100 bills and a note which read, in its entirety, "Fuck this plague town, I am out. R." I looked over to where Reba's room was. "She's gone?" "To the extent she was ever here, yes." "She's a ghost with an ATM card," Laertes yelled from the other room. "Well, this is great," I said. "At least she left her last month's rent." I dropped the envelope, the note, and the money on the table, and put my head in my hands. "This is what I get for not putting any of the rest of you on the lease. Don't you two leave, okay?" "So," Brent said, "about that." I glanced at him through my fingers. "No. Look, Jay, no!" Brent held up his hands. "Look, here's the thing. No!" I whined and dropped my head on the table, thunking it nice and hard as I did so. "Drama won't help," Laertes said from the bedroom. "You want to firebomb everything," I yelled back at him. "That's not drama, that's revolution," was his response. I looked back over to Brent. "Please tell me you're not abandoning me," I said. "We work in the theater," Brent said, "and it's like you said, everything's shutting down. I don't have any savings, and you know Laertes doesn't either." "I am hilariously broke," Laertes confirmed. Brent winced at that, then continued. "If things get bad, and they're going to get bad, we can't afford to stay." "Where will you go?" I asked. As far as I knew, Brent had no family to speak of. "We can stay with Laertes' parents in Boulder." "My old room is just the way I left it," Laertes said, "until I firebomb it." "No firebombing," Brent said, but his heart wasn't in it. Laertes' parents were the sort of outwardly very nice conservative people who wouldn't miss an opportunity to call Laertes by his dead name, and that shit will wear you down over time. "You're staying," I said. "We're staying for now, yes," Brent agreed. "But if we run out of your staying," I said more firmly. "Jamie, I can't ask you to do that," Brent said. "I can," Laertes said from the bedroom. "Fuck Boulder." "It's settled then," I got up from the table. "Jamie, we'll make it work." I smiled at Brent and then went to my room, which was the size of a postage stamp, but at least it was drafty and the floor creaked. I sat on my shitty twin bed, sighed, then lay down and stared at the ceiling for a good hour. Then I sighed again, sat up, and pulled out my phone. I turned it on. The Food Mood app was waiting for me on the screen. I sighed a third time and opened it. As promised, my Deliverator account was signed in and ready to go. Chapter 2. "Hello, and thank you for ordering from Food Mood," I said to the dude who opened the door to the ridiculously nice condo in the brand new building that the doorman let me into because he knew I was an expected delivery person and not probably a robber. "I am your Deliverator, Jamie. It is my passion to bring you your," and here I looked at my phone, 7 spice chicken and vegan egg rolls. I thrust the bag forward for the dude to take. "They make you say that?" he said, taking the bag. "They really do," I confirmed. "Delivering isn't actually your passion, is it?" "It's really not." "I understand. It will be our little secret." "Thank you." I turned to go. "Hope you find your samurai swords." I stopped turning. "What?" "Sorry, inside joke," the dude said. "You know Deliverator is from Snow Crash, right? The Neal Stephenson book? Anyway, the protagonist of the book is a delivery guy who has samurai swords. I forget the hero's name." I turned back all the way. "Thank you," I said. "I have been delivering food for 6 months, and you're the first person to get the reference at all." "I mean, it's pretty obvious." "You would think, right? It's only a modern classic of the genre, but no one gets it. First, no one cares." I waved wildly to encompass all of the Philistine Lower East Side and possibly all 5 boroughs of New York City. "And second of all, when anyone comments on it, they think it's a play on the Terminator." "Well, to be fair, it is a play on the Terminator." "Well, yeah," I said, "but I think it's come into its own." "I'm pretty sure we've just found your passion," the dude said. I was suddenly aware of my emphatic body language, perhaps made more emphatic by the fact that I, like the dude, was wearing a face mask, because New York City was a plague town in a plague country, and any potential vaccine was still undergoing double-blind studies somewhere we were not. "Sorry," I said. "At one point in my life, my dissertation was going to be on utopian and dystopian literature. As you might expect, Snow Crash was in there as one of the latter." I nodded and turned to go. "Wait," the dude said. "Jamie Gray?" "Oh my God," my brain said. "Just walk away. Walk away and never admit that someone knows your deliverationing shame." But even as my brain was saying that, my body was turning back, because like puppies, we are enculturated to turn when our name is called. "That's me," I said, the words popping out with the last one sounding like my tongue was desperately trying to recall the whole sentence. The dude smiled, set down his bag, took a step back to get out of the immediate breath zone, and unhooked his mask for a second so I could see his face. Then he put it back on. "It's Tom Stevens." My brain raced around in the primordial LinkedIn of my memory, trying to figure out how I knew this dude. He wasn't helping. He clearly expected to be so memorable that he would pop up in my head instantly. He wasn't. And yet. Tom Stevens, who dated Iris Banks, who was best friends with my roommate Diego when I lived in that apartment on South Kimbark just above 53rd Street and used to come to our parties sometimes, I said. "That's very exact," Tom said. "You went to the business school." "I did. Hope you don't mind. Not super academic. I mean," I motioned to the very nice condo in the brand new building. "It turned out okay for you." He glanced at the condo as if noticing it for the first time, the bastard. "I guess it did. Anyway, I remember you talking about your dissertation at one of those parties once." "Sorry," I said. "I did that a lot at parties back then." "It's fine," Tom assured me. "I mean, it got me to read Snow Crash, right? You changed lives." I smiled at that. "So why did you leave your doctoral program?" Tom asked me the next time I delivered food to him, which was an Ethiopian mixed meat combo with injera. "I had a quarter-life crisis," I said. "Or a 28-year-old crisis, which is the same, only slightly later." "Got it." "I saw all these people I knew of. People like you. No offense." Tom grinned through his mask. Guy saw it through the eye crinkles. "None taking. Going off and having lives and careers and taking vacations and meeting hot people. And I was sitting in Hyde Park with the same 16 people in a crappy apartment, reading books and arguing with undergrads that no, actually, they did have to turn in their papers on time." "I thought you liked reading books." "I do, but if you're only reading books because you have to, it becomes much less fun." "But when you got your doctorate, you could become a professor." I snorted at this. "You have a much more optimistic view of the academic landscape than I do. I was looking down the barrel of adjunct professorships for the rest of my life." "Is that bad?" I pointed at his food. "I'd make even less than I do delivering your injera." "So you ditched it all to become a Deliverator, Tom said, as I delivered his Korean fried chicken. No, I said. I actually got a job at Food Mood. A real one with benefits and stock options. Then I got fired by their dick-nozzle CEO just as the pandemic ramped up. That sucks. You know what really sucks? I said. After he punted me into the street, he took the ideas I had for locking up restaurants and paying deliverators more. Well, some of the deliverators, anyway. You only get paid more if you get more than 4 stars, so remember to give me 5 stars, please. I'm right on the edge. Every star counts, my dear deliveration-y. Deliveration-y? I rolled my eyes. Don't ask. Tom smiled again. Eye crinkles. I take it you weren't the one to come up with the deliverator name. Oh, hell no. So, you worked there. You can tell me this, Tom said, when I delivered his Chicago-style deep-dish pizza, which, honestly, I was surprised was allowed within the borders of New York City at all, much less this close to Little Italy. What's with the umlauts? You mean, why is it Food Mood, not the more logical Food Mood? Yes, that. Because Food Mood was already taken by a food delivery app in Bangladesh, and they wouldn't sell the name, I said. So if you're ever in the Mymensingh area, be sure to use the app with the name that actually makes sense. I've been to Bangladesh, Tom said. Well, sort of. Sort of? For my job. It's complicated. Are you a spy? No. A mercenary? That would explain this very nice condo in a brand new building. I'm pretty sure mercenaries live in double wides in the woods of North Carolina, Tom said. Of course you would say that, I said. That's what they tell mercenaries to say. I work for an NGO, actually. Definitely a mercenary. I'm not a mercenary. I'm going to remember you said that when I see you on CNN as part of a Bangladeshi coup. This is the last time I'm going to get a delivery from you for a while, I'm afraid, Tom said to me when I delivered his shawarma platter to him. My job is taking me back out into the field, and I'll be there for several months. Actually, this is the last time you'll ever get a delivery from me, I said. You're quitting? I laughed. Not exactly. I don't understand. Oh, you haven't heard then, I said. Food Mood is being bought out by Uber for, like, $4 billion and rolled into Uber Eats. Apparently, we were so successful at locking up the best restaurants and the best deliverators that Uber decided it was just easier to buy us and all our exclusivity contracts. So the CEO who stole your ideas, Rob Shitmonkey Sanders, yes, is now becoming a billionaire. It's an 80% cash deal, so, yep, pretty much. And you don't want to deliver for Uber. See, that's the best part, I said. Uber already has their delivery people, and they didn't want to have to roll over all the deliverators. That would make the delivery people they already have unhappy. So they're only taking the ones that had 4-star and above ratings. I opened my Food Mood app and showed him my stats. 3.975 stars, baby. I always gave you 5 stars, Tom said. Well, I appreciate that, Tom, for what little good it does me now. What are you going to do? Long term? I have no fucking idea. I was barely scraping by as it is. I'm the only one of my roommates who had anything approaching close to steady work, so I was paying the rent and the utilities and most of the food. We're in the middle of a plague, so no one's hiring for anything. I have no savings and nowhere else to go, so yeah, no idea long term. But, I held up a finger, short term? I'm going to buy a bottle of shitty vodka and drink the whole damn thing in my shower. That way, when I make a mess of myself, it'll be easy for my roommates to clean up. I'm sorry, Jamie. It's not your fault, I said. And anyway, I apologize for unloading on you. It's all right. I mean, we're friends. I laughed again at this. It's more like we have a workable service relationship with a tenuous personal history, but thank you, Tom. I actually did enjoy deliverating to you. Enjoy your shawarma. I started to go. Hold on, Tom said. He set down his shawarma and disappeared into the recesses of his very nice condo. A minute later, he came back and thrust his hand out at me. Take this. I stared at his hand. There was a business card in it. My face did a thing. Tom noticed, even through the mask. What is it? Honestly? Yeah. I thought you were going to give me a cash tip. This is better. This is a job. I blinked at this. What? Tom sighed. The NGO I work for. It's an animal rights organization. large animals. We spend a lot of time in the field. There's a team I'm part of. We're supposed to ship out in the next week. One of my team members has COVID and is currently in a hospital in Houston, hooked up to a ventilator. Tom saw my face do another thing and he held up a hand. He's out of danger and is going to recover, or so they tell me. But he's not going to recover before my team ships out this week. We need someone to replace him. You could do it. This card is for our recruitment officer. Go see her. I'll tell her you're coming. I stared at the card some more. What is it now? Tom asked. I really did kinda think you were a mercenary. It was his turn to laugh. I'm not a mercenary. What I do is much, much cooler and much more interesting. I don't have any training for whatever it is you do that involves large animals. You'll do fine. Also, if you don't mind me being blunt, at this point, what I really need is a warm body that can lift things. He pointed at his shawarma. I know you can lift things. And the pay? I asked, and immediately regretted it, because that seemed like kicking a gift horse in the mouth. Tom motioned at the very nice condo as if to say, see? Then he held out the card again. I took it this time. I'll let Gracia know you're coming, Tom said, and looked at his watch. It's 1 p.m. now. You can see her today, probably, or early tomorrow, but that's pushing it in terms of timing. You need an answer that quickly? Tom nodded. Yeah, that's kind of the catch, actually. As long as Gracia signs off on it, the job is yours, but you sort of have to decide now whether you want it. I know that's not cool of me, but I'm in a bind, and if you can't take it, I have to find someone else, fast. Well, I'm free, I said. You were literally my last deliberation-y. Okay, good, Tom. Yes? Why? I mean, thank you, and I really, sincerely mean that. Thank you so much. You're saving my life right now. But why? One, because you need a job, and I have a job to hand out, Tom said. Two, because from a totally self-interested point of view, you are saving my ass, because we can't go out into the field without a full team, and I don't want to be saddled with some random person we don't know. You're right, we're not friends. Not yet. But I do know you. And three, Tom smiled again. Let's just say you turning me on to Snow Crash a few years ago put me on the path I'm on now. So in a way, I'm just returning the favor. Now, he pointed to the card. That address is in Midtown. I'll tell Gracia to expect you around 2:30. Get going. Chapter 3. Let's get right to it, Gracia Avea said to me. What did Tom tell you about KPS? The offices for KPS, the name of the organization on the card Tom gave me, were on 37th in the same building as the Costa Rican consulate on the fifth floor. The office apparently shared a waiting room with a small medical practice. I had been in the waiting room for less than a minute when Avea came to get me to take me to her personal office. There was no one else in the KPS office. I guess they, like most everyone else, were working from home. He told me that you were an animal rights organization, I said, and that you do work in the field, and that you need people to lift heavy objects. We are, we do, and we do, Avea agreed. Did he tell you what kind of animals? Large animals? Is that a question? No, I mean, he said large animals, but he wasn't specific. Avea nodded. When you think of large animals, what do you think of? I guess elephants? Hippos, giraffes, maybe rhinos? Anything else? I suppose there are whales, I said. But it didn't seem to me Tom was talking about those. He said in the field, not out to sea. Technically, in the field would indicate either, Avea said. But yes, we do most of our work on land. I like land, I said. I don't drown there. Jamie, may I call you by your first name? Please. Jamie, here's the good news. Tom was right. We need a body for this next field operation, and we need it now. Tom's recommended you, and between him calling me and you arriving, I did a background check on you. No arrests, no FBI or CIA or Interpol flags, no problematic social media posts. Even your credit score is good. Well, as good as it can be for anyone who has student loans. Thanks! I love forever paying off a master's I will never ever use. On that topic, your master's thesis is pretty good. I blinked. You read my master's thesis? I skimmed it. How did you get it? I have friends in Chicago. Okay. Wow. My point is, you're not an obvious danger or a potential problem for your other soon-to-be teammates. And for us, right now, that works. So, congratulations. You'll have the job if you want it. That's great, I said. Okay. An immense boulder of stress I didn't even know was sitting between my shoulders was suddenly lifted. I wasn't going to be homeless and starving in the middle of a pandemic. Avea held up a finger. Don't thank me yet, she said. The job is yours, but I need to make sure you understand what the job is so you can decide if you actually want it. All right. First, understand that when we say KPS is an animal rights organization, we are actively engaged with these animals. Very large, very wild, very dangerous animals. We will train you on how to interact with them, and we maintain stringent safety protocols at all times. But you can get injured severely, and if you're not careful, you can actually die. If you have any hesitation on this score, or if you have any problem following to the letter the directions and instructions you are given, then this is not the job for you. I need you to verbally acknowledge that you understand this. I understand, I said. Good. The second thing is that when we say we are away in the field, we mean that we are away, as in away from civilization for months on end, as in no internet, as in very little communication with the outside world, almost no news in or out. What you take with you is what you have. You live simply and rely on others and allow others to rely on you. If you can't live without Netflix and Spotify and Twitter, this is not the job for you. You will be in the field. Acknowledge this, please. Can I ask for a bit of clarification here? Of course. When we say in the field, how in the field is that? I asked. Is it we are far away from the rest of the world, but we still have walls in the field? Or is it we live in small tents and poop in holes we dig ourselves in the field? Do you have a problem with pooping in a hole that you've dug yourself? I've never done it, but I'm willing to learn. Avea smiled at this. I think the mask made it more ambiguous than I'd like. It's possible you may have to poop in a hole from time to time. That said, our field base does have freestanding structures and plumbing. Okay, I said. I understand and acknowledge this then. The third thing is that what we do is confidential, which means that you cannot speak to anyone outside of KPS about what you do or where you go. I need to strongly emphasize that security and secrecy are extremely important to what we do and how we operate, enough so that if you are discovered to have leaked any information to anyone, even loved ones, we can and will prosecute you to the fullest extent possible under the law. This is not an empty threat. We've done it before. Does this mean I have to sign a non-disclosure agreement? This is the NDA right now. But I already know what you do. You know we're an animal rights organization. Right. It's a little like saying the CIA is a data services company. So you are spies or mercenaries? Avea shook her head. Neither. We operate the way we do for the safety of the animals we care for. Bad things would happen if we didn't. I thought about the stories I'd read about poachers and hunters killing endangered animals by reading the geolocation data off of pictures tourists had put online. I got it. One question, I said. I'm not going to be asked to break any laws, am I? No, Avea said. I can promise that. All right. I understand and accept then. Very good. Avea got out a small sheet. In that case, some very quick questions for you. First, do you have a valid passport? Yes. I had intended to go to Iceland over the summer before the plague hit, and I lost my job and had to spend all my time delivering food to shut-in Manhattanites. No major physical disabilities? Avea looked up. I should be clear. You're about to get a complete physical from Dr. Lee across the way, so this is just meant to cover things broadly. No disabilities, and I'm healthy. Any allergies? None yet. How do you handle heat and humidity? I interned one summer in Washington, D.C. and didn't die, I said. Avea started to ask the next question and then paused. This next question is on what you think about science fiction and fantasy, but I read your master's thesis, so we can skip this one. I assume you'd say you're pretty comfortable with the genre. My master's thesis had been on bioengineering and science fiction, from Frankenstein through the Murderbot novellas. Yes, although that's kind of a random question. It's not, Avea assured me. Do you have a will or have otherwise made any estate planning? No. She tutted at this and made a note. Any dietary restrictions? I tried being a vegan for a while, but I couldn't live without cheese. They have vegan cheese. No, they don't. They have shredded orange and white sadness that mocks cheese and everything it stands for. Reasonable, Avea said. It would be difficult to be a vegan where you're going anyway. Final question. Do you mind needles? I'm not a huge fan, but I don't have a phobia, I said. Why? Because you're about to meet a lot of them. Let's do this first and get it over with, Dr. Lee said before shoving a cotton swab through my nostril all the way back to my brain. This was actually the last part of my physical, which I was informed I had passed, but the first part of my vaccine regimen. Well, that's fun, I said when it was done. If you think that's fun, let's not ever meet socially, Dr. Lee said. She packed up the swab to be tested. You don't look like you're infected, but of course no one ever looks infected at the beginning, so we'll just be sure. And in the meantime, let's get you shot up. She reached into a cabinet and pulled down a tray holding a series of syringes. What are those? I asked. These are your basic vaccinations, she said. Just the usual stuff, new and boosters. Measles, mumps, rubella, multispectral flu, chickenpox, smallpox. Smallpox? Yes, why? It's extinct. You'd think so, wouldn't you? She held up one of the syringes. This is new. COVID vaccine. It's out? Technically, it's experimental. Don't tell your friends. They'll be jealous. Now, how much international travel have you done? Not much. Canada for a conference last year. Mexico as an undergrad for spring break. Asia? Africa? I shook my head. Dr. Lee harumphed and reached up for another tray of syringes. I started counting. I got nervous. Dr. Lee noticed. I promise you want the shots more than you want what they're protecting you from, she said. I believe you, I said. It's just a lot. She patted my shoulder. That's not a lot. She reached up again and pulled down a final tray, which had at least 10 syringes on it. There. Now it's a lot. Jesus Christ, I actually moved away from the tray table. What the hell are those? They told you you'd be working with big animals, right? Yeah, and... Okay, so, Dr. Lee pointed to the closest syringes in the new tray. Those are for the diseases the animals could give you. She pointed farther down. Those are for the diseases their parasites could give you. She pointed to the last of those. And those are for the diseases you can catch just by existing in the open air. Holy shit. Look at it this way, she said. We're not only protecting you from them. We're protecting them from you. Can't you just give them to me all at once in an IV drip or something? Oh no, that would be bad. Some of these vaccines don't react well to others. And yet you're going to put all of them into my body. Well, we have a specific order they go in, she said. So your bloodstream will have diluted the first of them by then. You're fucking with me, aren't you? I said. Sure, let's go with that, Dr. Lee said. Also, really quickly, let's talk side effects. For the next couple of days, you might feel achy or sore, and you might run a slight fever. If that happens, don't panic. That's perfectly normal. It just means your body is learning about the diseases we want it to fight. All right? Also, at least a couple of these are going to make you feel ravenously hungry. Go ahead and eat all you want, but avoid excessively fatty foods, since one of these is going to tell your body to purge fats in a way that absolutely challenges normal sphincter control. That's not great. It's a mess. Seriously, don't even think about trying to fart for the next 18 hours. It's not a fart. You will regret it. I don't like you. I get that a lot. Also, you may find the color blue giving you a migraine for the next couple of days. Blue. Yeah, we don't know why it happens. We just know it does. When it does, just look at something not blue for a while. You know the sky is blue, right? Yes, stay indoors. Don't look up.
Unbelievable.
Look, I don't make it happen. I just give you the shots that make it happen. Finally, with this one, Dr. Lee pointed to one of the last syringes in the longest tray. In about 250 injections, the recipient feels the urge for, let's say, intense and homicidal violence, like murder everyone in the building and build a pyre with their skulls level of violence. I can understand that, I assured her. No, you can't, she assured me back. Fortunately, there's a direct and accompanying side effect of extreme lassitude, which keeps most people from acting on the urge. So, like, I want to kill you, but that would mean leaving the couch. Exactly, Dr. Lee said. We call it murder stoner syndrome. That can't be real. It's very real, my friend. We've learned that certain foods help counteract the murderous urge. If it happens to you, and you actually have enough energy to stand up and move around, fry up some bacon, or eat a pint of ice cream, or have a couple of slices of bread with butter. So, fatty foods. Basically. You remember the part where you told me to avoid fatty foods, right? I do. So, just to be clear, the choices here are homicidal maniac or shit tornado. I wouldn't put it that way, and yes, but the chances are pretty good you won't experience either side effect, much less both at the same time. And if I do? Angrily consume your bacon on the toilet is my advice. Dr. Lee lifted the first syringe. Ready? Did your shots go well? Avea asked when I returned to her office. I didn't murder Dr. Lee, I said, but that may be because I can barely move my arm right now. Thank you for not murdering our doctor, she said. Then she removed her mask. I was vaccinated 2 weeks ago, she said, when she caught my look. And now that you've had your shots, I don't have to pretend I haven't had mine. But I'll put it back on if it makes you uncomfortable. No, it's fine. I thought about taking mine off, but didn't. Avea tapped a folder on her desk. We have some paperwork for you to fill out. We need information so we can direct deposit your salary and get you enrolled in our medical and benefits programs. We also have some optional paperwork here that gives us a limited power of attorney so we can deal with things like your rent and school loans. What? Avea smiled. Tom didn't tell you about that, I see. In addition to your salary, KPS covers your monthly rent and any school loan payments you might have. If you have credit card or other commercial debt, you have to pay that, but we can either pay it for you and deduct it out of your salary or help you set up an automatic payment for it if you haven't already done so. That's terrific, I said. We'll be asking a lot of you, Jamie, and we'll be taking you away from the world when we do it. The least we can do is make sure you have a place to come back to. Speaking of salary, I realize we haven't discussed numbers yet. If it's acceptable to you, we'll start you at $125,000. I mean, that's fine, I said, dazed. That doesn't include the $10,000 signing bonus to act as a bridge to your first paycheck. Of course it doesn't, I blithered stupidly. Avea reached into her desk and pulled out a manila envelope and passed it over to me. I stared at it. Is that? I began. $2,000 in cash and a cashier's check for the rest, she said. Although if you prefer, we can Venmo the $8,000. Can I? I stopped. Yes? Avea asked. I was going to ask if I can transfer this to my roommates to help them cover their expenses while I'm gone. It's just a cash bonus, Jamie. You can do whatever you want with it. And if you're still worried about them, while you're away, we can arrange to have some of your salary sent to them. We do that a lot. We're an international organization, and a lot of our employees send remittances home. This would be pretty much the same thing. This is great, I exclaimed. It was stupidly perfect how all my problems were suddenly solved with the strategic application of money. We're glad you think so, Avea said, and then tapped the folder again. There's an Amtrak ticket in here for 2 days from now. That should give you enough time to wrap up everything you need to here in New York City. Courier all the rest of the paperwork back to me before then, and then pack for a long trip. Don't worry about clothing, except for travel clothes. But otherwise, take with you what you'd want to bring on a several months long trip. and don't forget your passport. I took the folder. Where am I going? I asked. BWI Airport to start, Avea said. As for the rest, you'll find out. Chapter 4. Tom Stevens met me at the BWI rail station as I got off the train and looked at my carry-on and backpack. That's everything you're bringing? He asked me. I was told I only needed to bring travel clothes, I said. And other than that, I'm bringing a lot. I pointed to the carry-on. Personal hygiene products and snacks? I turned to bring attention to my backpack. All my electronics and several terabytes of movies, music, and books. Sunglasses and a baseball cap? I don't know, I figured I would need sunglasses and a baseball cap. Did I do it wrong? No, you did it fine, Tom said. We'll cover everything else. It's good to see you, Jamie. Thank you for taking the job. You're really saving our asses on this. Well, you really saved my ass, so we're even. I'll take that. He presented me with a ticket. Your travel documents. I took a look at the ticket. Where the hell is Thule Air Base? I asked. Greenland. We're going to Greenland? I sputtered. Are we hanging out with polar bears? I could see Tom grinning behind his mask, which I knew he was wearing as camouflage now, just as I was. Come on, we have to take a shuttle to the airport. Let's get you checked in. Our flight doesn't leave until 2 a.m. We've taken over a lounge. Greenland? Brent said to me over video on my phone. Right? I said. I was sitting in the Chesapeake Club Lounge, which in normal times, as I understood it, was the lounge British Airways passengers used before they boarded their flights to London. Today, however, it was populated by a few dozen KPS staffers, many of whom, like me, were chatting away on their phones, presumably to friends and loved ones, while they still could. I guess they have polar bears there, Brent said. And seals, I reminded him. They can get pretty big. I suppose. I don't know, I just assumed that when they said you'd be working with big animals, you'd be going to Africa. As far as I knew, that's where they kept all the big animals. That's your bigoted colonial cultural past showing, Laertes shouted off screen. No, it's not, Brent yelled back, and then turned back to me. I mean, it probably is. I'm just worried that I've severely underpacked warm clothes, I said. Gut a polar bear and crawl inside, Laertes shouted, still off screen. Like a tauntaun. Stop helping, Brent shot back. I'm pretty sure they won't let you freeze, he said to me. That's what Luke thought, Laertes shouted. Don't listen to him, Brent suggested. I smiled and changed the subject. Are you two going to be okay while I'm gone? I asked. Are you kidding? Jamie, you've saved our asses. We don't have to move and we're not going to starve. I could kiss you. Spicy! Laertes shouted. Not that kind of kiss, Brent qualified. No, I get it, I said. Apparently, I'm doing a lot of ass-saving today. Also spicy, Laertes added. You're going to miss his interjections to our conversations, Brent promised. And our conversations, come to think of it. I know it. I'll drop you updates when I can. If I can was more like it, but I didn't want to say that at the moment. Sounds good. Don't let them give you shit because you're the newbie. And if they do give you shit, let us know. We've got firebombs, Laertes shouted. We don't have firebombs, Brent amended. But, you know, we can get some. I laughed and signed off, probably for the last time in a while. I glanced up and saw a young woman looking over to me. Sorry, I said, I should have had earphones on for that conversation. No, it's fine, she said. It's nice to hear people having lives outside of this. She indicated the lounge and the KPS staff, whatever this is going to turn out to be. Ah, I said, getting it. This is your first day on the job, too. Yes, she admitted. There are a couple other of us new people, too, over there. She pointed to a pair of grad school-looking sorts, animatedly chatting, and then turned back to me. I'm Aparna Chowdhury, biology. Jamie Gray, lifting objects. She smiled at that. Would you like to come sit with us? I put my phone away. I would, I said. We walked over and the grad school-looking pair looked up. I found another newbie, Aparna said, excitedly, and pointed. Jamie lifts things. That's me, I confessed. Well, at least one of us is useful then, the one closest to me said, and waved. Kahurangi, he pointed, and this is Neve. They do astronomy and physics, and I do organic chemistry and some geology. We're nerds. Hi, Neve said, waving. I waved back. I mean, I was doing a dissertation on science fiction novels, so I think I qualify under nerd.
Wow, you really do, Kahurangi said. And here I thought you were just here for the meat hydraulics.
Oh, I am, I said. The failed doctoral dissertation is just a bonus. Tell Jamie what we were talking about earlier, Aparna said.
Oh, right, Neve said, and turned to me.
Greenland? What the actual fuck? I was going to respond, but someone started clapping their hands for attention. We all looked up to see a very authoritative-looking woman standing up. Everyone stopped talking, put their phones away, and gave her their attention. A couple of people started booing her, mockingly.
Oh, shut up, she said, fake irritably, and there was laughter.
For those of you who are back, it's good to see you back. For those of you who are new, who is new here?
The four of us raised our hands.
Oh, clustered up already. Very nice, she said. And there were laughs at that. For those who are new, I'm Bryn McDonald, commander of KPS Tanaka-based Gold Team, which is what this is.
She motioned around the room, which offered up slight cheers and applause.
Don't get too excited, she said, deadpan, and there was more laughter about that. Now, I'm sure you new people have a lot of questions, including, she motioned to the crowd, why Greenland? Everyone shouted back, except the new people. And we could tell you now, but we're not going to, McDonald said. Not because we're cruel, although we are cruel, someone interjected to laughs, but because it's a tradition to not spoil the surprise. Trust us, it will be worth it. In the meantime, just know, none of us knew either until we saw it with our own eyes. With that out of the way, as usual, the flight to Thule Air Base departs at 2 a.m. It's a 6.5-hour flight, and again, as usual, we'll have a mix of civilian and military folks with us on the flight. This means that for the duration, you're going to have to wear your masks. There were groans, and I don't want to hear whining about this. Just because you're vaccinated doesn't mean other people are, or that you can't still transmit to the uninoculated, so don't be an asshole. More grumbling, but people settled down. Now, we're all supposed to be seated together, but some of you might still have non-KPS people strike up a conversation, so if anyone asks why you're going to Thule Air Base, use our usual backstory of being Department of the Interior employees doing a geophysical survey of Greenland's glaciation. For the new people, we use that story because it's so boring that in the entire history of KPS, no one has ever followed up on it. Laughter. Otherwise, the usual rules apply. Do not talk about KPS business on the flight, or once we land, or to anyone who is not KPS. When we arrive, KPS intake personnel will be there to get us on our way, and so on and so forth, you know the drill, and you new folks, just keep an eye on everyone else and follow us. Do not get lost, or you stay at Thule Air Base for the winter. You do not want that life for yourself. More laughter. Weather report for Thule is cloudy and overcast, but above freezing. A small bit of cheering here, with light winds coming in from the east. Rest and relax. Call anyone you need to call. Get in those last emails and Facebook posts, because it's all going bye-bye soon.